I could have everyone's attention, please. My name is Emily, and I'm the moderator for this session. The name of the session is Client Service Standards with Your Team, Part 1. The session number is 22318. And in case you haven't attended any of the sessions this morning, I'd like to introduce you to our speaker. Her name is Tracy Doughty. She's consulted with over 100 practices nationwide, is a certified veterinary practice manager, and she serves on the board of directors for AVPMCA. She's been published in local and national veterinary journals, as well as being a contributing author for Management Basics for Veterinarians, and has spoken at local, regional, and national veterinary meetings. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. So earlier this morning, we talked about this vision of having a client-patient-centered practice. And this last session, we talked about how to create raving fans with our clients. Now I'm going to get into the nuts and bolts of what these standards could look like in your practice. Because the key is to set the standards with your healthcare team and then train them to the standards so that they can implement them in the practice on a daily basis. Staff empowerment can only be achieved through staff training. Doctors are not going to trust that the healthcare team can say it as good as they can say it if the healthcare team is not trained. So it's difficult to empower the staff when they have not had the adequate training, and you've got to get these healthcare team members trained. And I think it's a daunting task for the practice owner and the practice manager, because the question is, well, when do we train? How do we train? How do we empower? How do we leverage the healthcare team? And I think the top priority is to set standards around what your vision represents. The key is getting a vision in place that your team can buy into, they can share in, they can contribute to, that they're committed to. If you go back to your hospital and just start implementing standards without getting them on board to a future state and a bigger picture of where you're going as a team and as a practice, you may have some difficulty getting this implemented. So I think the first step with your healthcare team is doing a strategic planning session and getting them to all agree to where we're going as a practice and as a team, and get a clear, defined vision that they share in and that they're committed to. And then once you do that, then you start implementing standards in your practice. And here are some of the standards that I recommend implementing. You have standards of care, standards of image, standards of communication, standards of service, and standards of conduct. Let's talk about these standards. First standards is the standards of patient care. And these standards are determined by the veterinarian, which represent the level of care that you're going to provide in your practice. These standards are set high, and the healthcare team is trained to why they're essential to the delivery of healthcare. Now, some of the practices that I've worked with and consulted, they've actually set standards with the entire healthcare team in a meeting. And what they have found is that when they get the healthcare team involved in helping them set medical standards, many times the healthcare team will convince the veterinarian to set the standard higher than what they were willing to set. And I'll just give you some examples of what I'm talking about. I've been in practices where the healthcare team believed they needed to require pre-anesthetic blood work for all anesthetic procedures, and the veterinarian was uncomfortable doing that. Well, should I require it, or should I make that optional? Should I make that an option to the client? And the healthcare team convinced the doctor, no, we need to require it, or we need to require pain medication on all, you know, anesthetic procedures. It doesn't need to be an option anymore. It needs to be required. And so as they discussed it as a team, and obviously the veterinarian and the practice owner needs to make the final decision about the level of care that's going to be provided in the practice. But what I have found is that when you bring the healthcare team into the discussion and they give their input, many times they want to provide higher care to the clients and the patients than the veterinarian's willing to do, because the veterinarian many times fears rejection from the client. They fear the client doesn't want to have those services forced upon them per se. But in reality, if you create value in those services and you educate your staff to the reason behind why we have these standards in place, many times the clients will comply with very little pushback. But here are the different standards that you can set in your practice. You have wellness standards. diagnostic standards, therapeutic standards, hospitalization standards, anesthetic standards, surgical standards, and treatment standards. Let's look at each one of these and some different examples of these standards. Wellness standards, I think, is a fairly easy thing to standardize in your practice, and this is where I would start with your doctors and your healthcare team. But get your doctors together and let's decide what our standards are going to be with regard to our canines and felines, puppies and kittens, senior dogs, senior cats. Does everyone on your team know the importance of a physical exam? What we charge for our physical exam many times. I mean, I was working with, about 20 hospitals in the Houston area a couple weeks ago, and I asked all of them to tell me what their physical exam fee was, and it ranged from $27.50 to $55. That's a huge range. And they were all, you know, predominantly in the same area. So $27.50 and $55. What's the difference? I mean, do you believe the physical exam that's being performed out of those 20 practices are predominantly the same type of physical exam? Yes. But for some reason, the practice that's charging $27.50 is not creating value in it like the practice that's charging $55. And so when you get together with your team, you talk about the importance of that physical exam, but you also need to teach your team to create value in what they're being what's being provided. How often are you recommending a physical exam? Are you recommending it once a year? Every 6 months? Do you verbalize the 12 body systems to the client and add value and educate the client? So do your doctors actually go in when they do the physical exam? Are they examining the patient and communicating with the client what they're looking at? Mrs. Jones, I'm looking at the eyes. They're bright. They're clear. There's no redness. There's no swelling. So they're normal. And actually verbalizing what does look normal. So you're educating the client what to look for when the animal doesn't have normal symptoms. And so you're creating value in that. I've had clients say to me when I was managing my father's practice, why does he charge me for a physical exam? All he did was pat him on the head. Wow. There was obviously a disconnect there because he did not do a good enough job during that physical exam to educate and create value in that physical exam. And so when you set some standards around your physical exam, you're able to increase what you charge for it. I mean, I think $55 or $60 for a physical exam is a good fee, and that's what we should be charging for a physical exam on wellness pets. But many times we're charging less because we haven't created the value in it, and we're still worried about the client's pocketbook. And many times clients are willing to pay for the services, but we just don't create value in them. Sending home a summary of the normal and abnormal findings along with recommendations. It's proof that you actually performed the physical exam and you give that handout to them, and that creates value. So these are the types of things that you would sit down with your team in a weekly meeting and discuss regarding physical exams and setting some standards around your physical exams. And you get that documented in your standards handbook. Another wellness standard are your preventatives. What heartworm preventative do you recommend for your clients? What flea and tick control and prevention do you recommend? What about intestinal parasite control and prevention? Do you do strategic deworming? And actually sitting down with your team and discussing, because I think so many times there's just so much confusion with regard to all the carry in your practices, but getting with your team and let's decide what's going to be our standard recommendations, either based on the lifestyle of the pet or what products you think are the best product for your patients. But standardizing those products in your practice, you're going to streamline the efficiency. You're going to decrease the amount of inventory that you have in your hospital. And there's not going to be a lot of questions in your healthcare team's minds when they're talking to clients because they know this is our standard in our hospital. What about routine diagnostics? Do you require heart room testing, or does it depend on which doctor they see? Do you do testing once a year? Do you do testing every other year? What about fecal testing? Do you recommend healthy pet blood profiles on healthy pets? What's the age requirement that you start recommending that blood work? I have a client that recommends healthy pet profiles on puppies and kittens. And Antech Lab actually contacted them and said, wow, why are you finding so much familial renal disease and anemia in puppies? What's going on? And they said, well, we're recommending blood work on every pet that comes into our practice so that we have a baseline for normal at an early age, and we have it in the medical record, but also we're finding problems with these pets because we recommend blood work. So what are your standards? I think so many times we are not offering everything that we could be offering our clients because we haven't taken the time to look at what other practices are doing throughout the country and what clients are wanting. What about nutrition? Do you talk to clients about nutrition every time they come in for their wellness visit? And then I was in a practice over on the West Coast a couple of years ago, and they had every diet known to man in their practice. They had 5 doctors, and they were carrying everything. What about that? Just talk about just an extreme expense, but also confusion for the healthcare team. Which one do I talk to the client about? Streamline what you're offering to your client. Let's get highly knowledgeable about 1 or 2 diets. And those are the ones we talk to clients about, instead of carrying all of them. Client communication tools. It creates value in your wellness recommendations when you have excellent client communication tools. How many of you actually have written standards that you publicize in your practice and you give to your clients as a handout? Okay, just a few people. And I actually found this document in veterinary economics years ago, and I actually use it with my clients, but I'm just going to show you. I showed it yesterday with some of the attendees in one of the other sessions, but it's called Love and Protection Guidelines. But this is an excellent client communication tool, but it's also a great tool for your clients. So you have this actually, I have like 6 of these documents, 1 for kittens, 1 for puppies, 1 for adult dogs, 1 for adult cats, 1 for senior dogs, and 1 for senior cats. So when the client comes into the practice, your client care specialist gives them this handout, and it tells them what your standards are regarding wellness. And so it explains what we recommend based on the life stage of their pet, what services we recommend, what tests we recommend, and then it explains why we recommend them. There's a note about these recommendations. Ultimately, it's always the owner's decision to choose the level of care for their pet. This list of procedures and tests is specifically recommended at different stages of life. We will always be the advocates for the health, comfort, and well-being of your pet. It is our responsibility to offer the tests and procedures that will keep your pet healthy and free from disease. It is not unusual to discover problems as your pet ages. This is the natural part of the life process. When problems are detected early, they can usually be effectively managed. We want to provide the recommendations that will help your pet live a long and happy life. If you have specific questions, please don't hesitate to ask any person on our staff. And then it explains why each of these services are important. So now this becomes your standard wellness recommendations, and now you're able to give these to your clients, but also it's a training tool for your healthcare team. So when you bring in new employees, you're able to give this to them as a training tool so they know what our wellness standards are, and then explains why they are our wellness standards. A 12-body system comprehensive exam. Why is that important? Well, your pet ages 6 to 7 years for every human year. A thorough exam last year would therefore be equivalent to 6 to 7 years ago. We need to do a complete and thorough exam, nose to tail, each year. The doctor checks the eyes, ears, mouth, teeth, lymphatic system, heart, lungs, muscle skeletal system, abdomen, internal organs, skin, hair coat, and many other things along the way. Your pet cannot tell us how they feel or where it hurts. Veterinarians are specially trained to examine and interpret the findings in order to make recommendations for your pet's health. So this becomes an excellent tool for your clients and for your staff in regard to setting standards in wellness. I highly recommend that you implement something like that in your practice. Yes? Okay, so that's wellness, and I didn't cover dentistry, vaccinations, spay, neuter, all of those things you need to get standardized in your practice and have it in writing, have it in a handbook, your standards handbook, so that you can train your new employees, but you also start collecting these standards and documenting these standards with your existing staff and just keep adding to it every single week in your weekly meetings. You know, the first week you're going to spend on, for example, physical exams. Maybe you don't finish it in 1 week. Maybe it takes 3 weeks to cover physical exams. But you get it documented in your handbook, and then you move on to the next standard in your practice. This is not going to happen overnight. This is something that you're going to work on every single week, and then maybe in the next 12 to 24 months, you can get your standards set and start, and then have everyone train to them over the next year to 2 years. And I think it just depends upon how quickly, especially when you have multiple doctors, how quickly you can all agree to the standards. Because when you get multiple doctors together, sometimes, you know, and you know, the bottom line is, it's not, we've got to get the veterinarians out of the center of the practice and put the client and the patient in the center. And that, if that's your vision, then veterinarians are more willing to compromise with each other and realize, okay, I know I need to come together with my colleagues and make some compromise because I know that's what's best for the client and for the patient. If I can compromise and we can all come to a consensus on what we're going to recommend, then we can start utilizing the healthcare team to educate clients more because there's a standard way that we recommend things in our practice. Diagnostic standards. Do you have a standard in your practice where everyone knows that we want to diagnose the problem before we treat it? We diagnose before we treat. Or do you have doctors in your practice that treat things symptomatically without doing any diagnostics? I had a client last fall that I consulted, and one of the things I do is review financial information to determine just the financial health of the practice. And I look at how much of their income was generated by professional services. How much of their income was generated by lab work? How much of it was generated by radiology? How much of it was generated from anesthesia? How much of it was generated from pharmacy? Those types of things. And so I look at this, the percentages, and there's actually industry benchmarks that you can compare those to. AHA has the productivity pulse points. I think they just came out with the fourth edition. That's one place that you can look and compare your income categories to other practices in your region. So I take a look at those, and this particular practice was extremely low in lab work and extremely high in pharmacy. So what does that tell me as a consultant and you, the audience? So just symptomatically treating these patients. So I sat down with this doctor and I said, you know, I think it would be in everyone's best interest if you started started working up your cases more thoroughly. I said, you know, you're going to grow in income, number one. I said, but number two, it's best for the patient that you work up these cases more. And he said to me, I want to. I really do. I really want to do all those things. I just don't have the time. I am so busy. I'm seeing so many patients. I just don't have the time to work up those cases. And so the issue is, that's not good. But sometimes that becomes the mentality of some veterinarians. They get busy, they get in a rut, and they're not doing everything that they could be doing that's really best for the patient. So when you start standardizing your diagnostics and your practice, and your technicians are involved in the process, your veterinary assistants, your receptionists, everyone's involved, now they're all talking to the clients about those diagnostics. So when the client calls in and says, well, can't you just give me a cream for his ears? Do I really have to come in and see the doctor? Your client care specialist can say, well, Mrs. Jones, based on our standards, and our hospital, it's really better for us to diagnose the problem going on with Buffy's ears before we treat it with medication. We don't know which medication to give Buffy, first of all. And that's going to require us to do a physical exam on Buffy's ears and let Dr. Jones look in those ears. And I said, and then say, you know, I know Dr. Jones will probably want to do an ear cytology to test what type of bacteria and infection are going on in those ears, so then we can determine which medication is going to be best. So now you have a team that's able to solve people's problems, educate them, and they know what the standards are in your hospital. And I asked this question yesterday, those of you who were in my meeting yesterday, how many tests are there in a veterinary practice? I think there's over 50 or under 20. There's under 20. If you count blood work as counted as one, okay? There's really under 20 tests in a veterinary practice. Why can't you spend some time sharing your knowledge with your healthcare team and let them know when you do those tests based on the symptoms of the pet, so that they can educate clients about what diagnostics we do on those routine common maladies that come into veterinary practice? And furthermore, when clients do go into the exam room and they look at the reason for the visit, they can prepare the client for those tests and maybe even get them started. So if you've got a client who comes in for, you know, that's maybe vomiting and diarrhea, go ahead and get that fecal started. Maybe go ahead and do that parvo test because they know that's the standard in the practice. And get those going when the doctor's in the other room talking to another client or consulting a client, or they're in their office on the phone talking to a client. They've already gotten that started because they know that's the standards that you've set in your hospital. One of the things that I think is great in my father's practice, he actually has groupings in his computer that has everything that would go into, for example, say an ear case. All the possible scenarios. All the tests are in one grouping. All of the potential services, they're all in one grouping. And so it jogs the memory of the staff and the doctor of what potentially could take place on that case, and you just go in and choose what you actually performed that day. And so I recommend doing something like that. Like the client who was treating things really symptomatically, he's gotten into a routine and a habit of how he practices medicine. And we got to get him out of that habit of doing more diagnostics and recommending more services. And so we went into his computer system. We put all those groupings in his computer system, but now he's got to use them, right? And how are we going to get him to use them? So we developed a travel sheet, and we actually put those groupings on that travel sheet so he can actually see it to remind him to do those things on a daily basis. And it reminds, and the healthcare team's there to support him and to go in and make those recommendations also, so it becomes a group effort in changing his mindset of, okay, I have the time to do this, my staff is here to support me to get these things accomplished, and we're going to increase our capacity to service our clients better. We're providing better care to our patients and really preventing some potential for malpractice in reality. Because if those things are not being done and, you know, that doctor gets in some sort of lawsuit, he's going to be in trouble. What about therapeutic standards? You know, getting with your team and streamlining your therapeutic standards in your practice. What medications that you use in your hospital. You know, the issue is what types of injections that you give. You give injections. If you're going to send home a prescription, do you give an injection too every time and get it started in that patient's body and you know, bloodstream? Conversion charge, so they don't have to ask, okay, what dosage do I need to give for this pet? So they actually have a chart, so there's not a lot of questions that they have to go and ask to get their job accomplished. Dosage rates are already, you know, they're put on a chart so that they can identify what they're supposed to give based on the weight of the pet. chart for fluid flow rates. How often do you change the catheter on hospitalized patients? Animal Bill of Rights. Being able to tell your healthcare team and your clients, we have Animal Bill of Rights, Mrs. Jones. All of our patients have a right to have a clean cage, food, and water, right to have affection, right to preventative care, and right to an accurate diagnosis. Start to really give your clients the sense that you are the pet advocate and you truly care about their pet when you are able to communicate these things to your clients. And you know what? Your healthcare team will feel a sense of pride of working in your practice when you start documenting these standards and you start training them to these standards. They will feel proud about the reputation that you guys have in your area. And they'll start talking to your clients about that. Hospitalization standards. Do you have standards in your practice right now with regard to your hospitalized pets? Where are your hospitalized pets located in your facility? How are they cared for? Do you allow your clients to come and visit their pet when they're being hospitalized? And do you communicate that to your clients so that they understand when visiting hours are? What about evaluating the pet? How often do you evaluate hospitalized pets? I had a practice that I consulted and animal came in and was not doing well at all, and the animal was put in the boarding area and completely left alone, and it died like 3 hours later. They obviously did not have any hospitalization standards in place in this practice. And the veterinarian was like, well, you know, yeah, he probably, it was his time. So that's not going to give the staff, obviously, comfort and confidence and the veterinarians and what's being provided in that hospital. I mean, that pet needed immediate attention. But did not receive immediate attention. And there wasn't a sense of urgency of taking care of that pet. It just got put in the back, got left alone with a kennel assistant, and died. And it's because there was no standard in place in that particular practice. And so we need to have some standards, and our healthcare team need to be trained to those standards. Regarding medications, who gives the medications? How are the medications are documented in the medical record? How the medical records updated for those patients? And once you have that in writing, as you bring new employees in, they're trained to those standards, and so things do not fall through the cracks. Because sometimes we have, 50 patients in the hospital or 30 patients in the hospital, it's easy for us to drop some balls and for things to fall through the cracks, right? Anesthetic standards, pre-anesthetic profiles. Do you require pre-anesthetic blood work? Do you recommend pre-anesthetic blood work? Do you have different profiles based on the age of the pet? Does the healthcare team know what those are and what you do? Pre-medications. Are you progressive in the type of pain management that you're giving your patients today? Or do you need to take a look at improving your quality of medicine with regard to pain management? Because I know there's been a lot of changes. You know, my father's been practicing for, 30 years, and he's changed a lot in his pre-anesthetic protocols and pain medication and things like that. And so you have to take a look at those things and look at what is best for the patient, because there's been changes in technology and what is being offered today. And so as a veterinarian team and as a healthcare team, you have to sit down and talk about what's the best available medical care we can give our patients. And let's decide on what that is, and understand it, and then let's make that our standard so we can educate our clients about it so that they'll comply with our recommendations. Do you provide fluid therapy on all anesthetic procedures? Do you charge for it? Why would you need to do fluid therapy? So you're setting those standards and training your healthcare team, monitoring standards. Do you use pulse oximeter? How do you monitor the patient after you finish the procedure? Using some of the best, safest anesthesia available. You know, the bottom line is this is not only to improve the efficiency in your workflow. This is a twofold standard. One, you want to improve the efficiency in your workflow so that your technical team can go in and can get those patients prepared and ready for surgery because they know what the standard is. Especially when you have multiple doctors, they're not having to say, well, this doctor's protocol is this way, and this doctor's protocol is this way, and this doctor's protocol is this way, and so I have to just wait for him to tell me what he wants me to do before I get these animals down and ready for surgery. So they have to wait. And they're waiting and they're waiting because the doctor's in his office on the phone talking to clients and is in rooms and he's doing all that and they're in the back and they're waiting because they don't know what needs to be done. But when you get those things standardized in your practice, the technical team knows what the anesthetic protocols are. They know what medications are given based on the age of the pet, the weight of the pet, the breed of the pet. They know what combinations are given, what injectables or pre-medications are to be given. All of those things are standardized in the practice so the technical team knows how to get those surgeries prepared and ready to go for when it's time to actually do the surgery. But also, the client care specialist team, they understand our anesthetic protocols from a financial point of view and a quality of medicine point of view. So when clients call in and they're shopping about our services and they're asking questions about the procedures, your client care specialist team are able to tell clients, yes, Mrs. Jones, I realize that our spay procedure may be a little more expensive than the, you know, some of the other practices that you call, but I want to make sure you're comparing apples to apples because in our hospital we have certain standards of care that are the best that we could possibly provide for Buffy. So when you are shopping around and you're checking prices, I want to make sure that you understand that our procedure includes pre-anesthetic blood work. And we do pre-anesthetic blood work on all spay procedures because we want to make sure that Buffy is not going to experience some complications. And that blood work is a window into her body and it's going to allow us to identify whether she's got any problems going on internally that could potentially create some complications during that procedure. We want to make sure that her body can metabolize the anesthesia. And we know that's in Buffy's best interest, so we run that blood work before any time we put an animal under anesthesia. And our spay procedure also includes fluid therapy. We want to make sure that Buffy is well hydrated during her procedure so that she can heal faster. We're also going to send home and give her pain medication throughout the procedure because we find pets that are not suffering pain heal faster. And also, our procedure also includes the follow-up care, and we use the safest anesthesia available. So when you're checking around, Mrs. Jones, I just want to make sure that you know that this is the level of care that we're going to provide for Buffy. And our prices may be a little bit more, but we believe that we're providing the best for her. So when you start setting those standards, everyone in the hospital team knows what we do and why we do it and how to educate the client about it so that they're going to comply with our recommendations. Does that make sense to everyone? Surgical standards. Just using sterile technique. Not every veterinarian uses sterile technique. I mean, I've been in practices where they're not using sterile technique. And is that really what's best for the patient? And so when you're talking to clients, you're able to explain to them, you know, we use sterile technique in all of our, with all of our surgeries with our patients. We have the best and the highest tech equipment available in veterinary medicine, Mrs. Jones. For example, like laser surgery or endoscopy or, you know, whatever equipment you have. You need to be able to train everyone on your team to know what equipment you have and why you use it and why it's in the best interest of your patients. Surgical wound appearance. This is something very simple, but also it sometimes can be complicated for the staff to talk to clients about when they need to come back in to have their sutures removed, or are they not going to be removed? Are they staples? Are they, you know, are they going to dissolve? And so we just need to be able to communicate with our staff what the surgical wound appearance looks like and what's the follow-up care regarding those things. Post-surgical care. Having some standards regarding that. Release instructions. One standard could be every animal that goes home from surgery has written release instructions. Because the more our clients are educated about the care of their pet, the more they're going to comply with our recommendations and the less client negative experiences they have. You're not going to have to deal with clients that are upset and irritated and frustrated and rude because we didn't give them the proper information about their pet. So they go home with written release instructions. Every animal that goes home with surgery, you know, gets a bandana, for example, around their neck just to celebrate that bond with their pet that, you know, something's, you know, serious happened to Buffy today and so he's going to go home with a bandana. And then treatment standards. I talked about having these groupings preloaded in the computer system. This is a huge benefit to so many people in the practice. When you have, and I had a veterinarian say it like this, if you have 12 body systems, you probably have about 10 routine medical protocols that you're going to see on a routine basis in general practice. So if you had 120 medical treatment protocols preloaded in your computer system, you probably would have just about every scenario that you would see on a routine basis in your practice. So if you have those preloaded in your computer system, when you've got that new graduate that just joined your team and they're not confident and sure about how to handle a case, they can go and look at the treatment protocol that you've already got in your computer system. And that can help guide them. Yes. Right. She said they've created those treatment protocols and it's, number one, do you guys have issues with fee capture, missing fees, veterinarians forgetting to charge for services that they provided, or forgetting to do a service just because they get busy? And she said that that's really helped with, you know, not forgetting to do the services and not forgetting to charge for them, because for like a cystotomy, for example, every possible thing that would fall under a cystotomy procedure is listed in that estimate and treatment plan. And it's really improved the efficiency in their workflow and obviously increase in income and efficiency with the staff. And there's a consistency in the quality of care that's being provided, especially when you've got multiple doctors. You get those treatment protocols preloaded in your computer system. Now there's better consistency in how we practice medicine in our hospital. Yes, is there going to be times when the veterinarian might want to deviate or change or delete or add to these treatment protocols? Absolutely. They need the freedom to be able to do that. But what these treatment protocols do is it allows a standardization that we can go to and use as a template for the healthcare team to be able to talk to clients about what to expect if they're, you know, wanting to know how much something's going to cost in the practice. It gives the technician is able to say, would you like me to go prepare that estimate and go over it with the client and actually anticipate the doctor's needs and say, here, is this what you want me to present to the client? And then it becomes the instructions of what to do next. Now they've got the treatment plan. Now they can go back to the treatment area and can start the services, can put in the IV catheter, can start the fluid therapy, can start giving some of the injections while they're waiting for the doctor to come in and tell them the next steps of what needs to be done. So it really increases the consistency and the quality of care. It empowers the team, and there's huge efficiency in the workflow. How are we doing on time, Emily? Okay, good. Okay, so does anyone have, before I move on to standards of image, does anyone have any questions about standards of patient care? You guys see the value in standardizing some of those things in your practice? Once you get those standardized in your practice, you're really going to be able to empower your healthcare team to talk to clients about 80 to 90% of the services that are being provided in your hospital. And you're going to be able to increase and improve compliance in your practice. So those are the standards of care component. Let's talk about standards of image. There's an old saying in management that the first 4 minutes is all you have to make a great impression. So which is more appealing, this or this? So what does the exterior facility say to your clients? When they pull up into your parking lot, what do they see? They see a beautiful, attractive facility that depicts high-quality medicine and exceptional client service. You have a nicely manicured lawn and landscaping. Is there trash in the yard? Is there poop in the yard? Is your sign, is it well lit and visible? Is your logo branded on your sign? You have to think about, you have to look at your facility through your client's eyes and determine, do we need to, is it time for a facelift? Is it time to improve the way our facility looks because we're taking our practice to another level? We're changing the direction and the future state of our hospital, and the facility does play a part in that. So what is the sign, the parking lot, the landscape, and the exterior of the building say to you? And to your clients. What about the reception area? When they walk in the door, does it smell good? Is it warm and inviting? This is actually my father's practice reception area. But is it... Actually, this was probably, it looks different now than that. But I would say up here on top, I can't stand counters that have a lot of clutter. I mean, where you've just got so many messages going crazy, you know, you're promoting everybody's product, everybody's stuff, and I don't think that's necessary. I think sometimes you can have too many messages in your reception area. And so you need to be cognizant of, okay, what are we promoting when people walk into our reception area? What exactly are we promoting here? And you need to think about all the things that you have sitting up on your counters. I'm a firm believer, if you can't mat and frame it, don't hang it. It needs to look professional. You know, I don't like, you know, copy paper that's got some type of message on it and you tape it to the reception desk for clients to read as a sign. I don't think that's professional. So you need to think about how does the image represent who we are as a practice and as a team and what we're trying to convey to our clients about their pets. So is your waiting area, is it clean, odor-free, and organized? Are the plants alive and healthy? Because if you can't keep plants alive and healthy, how are you going to keep their pets alive and healthy? Seriously, that's what clients think. See how cluttered this is? See the little notes? I just don't think that's, you know, really depicts professionalism and that you've really got it together as a practice and as a team. So we have to go in, we have to look at what image are we conveying to our clients? What message are we communicating by the way our practice looks? What about the rest of the hospital? Can you take your clients and give them a tour of your facility and feel proud about the way it looks? What about your healthcare team? AHA came out with client service standards back in 2003, and they recommend that you have a uniform policy with your healthcare team. And this is the exact verbiage for the American Animal Hospital Association's client service standards regarding professional image. They say personal appearance has an influence on the development of trust and effective communication between individuals. By following a written protocol in regard to appearance, the practice is better able to foster trust and communication between the team members and the clients they serve. So when you have this, so you have to think about, how does my healthcare team look? And does it portray an image that's going to instill confidence in that healthcare team member? I had a practice that I consulted, and the doctor was, he really had this individual nature about him and the way he expressed himself. He had earrings here and here. He had an earring here. He had like two or three loop earrings on both ears. He had tattoos all over his arm. His hair was red and kind of curly. And he wore black rimmed glasses. And he liked wearing his scrub tops kind of tight fitting, you know, and he had big muscles. You kind of get in the picture? And I think, I know because I talked to several of their clients, that was a distraction. And he had a tongue ring too, right on his tongue, that was like a big spike. I think actually he had a spike right here in the eyebrow. So it was this metal spike that came out, you know, here, and it came out on the other side of his eyebrow. And it was a huge distraction for the clients. I mean, it's hard when you're looking at somebody and you're communicating with somebody and you're looking at all that. And it's hard to retain what that person is saying because it's a distraction. Huge distraction. And this veterinarian was brilliant. He was brilliant. I mean, he was so smart. And he truly, truly cared about his patients. And he had a strong work ethic. But sometimes I think his image really did not depict that. There's science behind this particular uniform. At Advanced Animal Care Center, which is my father's practice, they wear blue button-down collared shirts with khaki pants, brown belt, and brown shoes. They have the logo monogrammed on one side, name tag on the other. And blue and white are the most trusting colors. Research shows that blue and white are very trusting colors. So when you wear blue or you wear white, people are more compliant with your recommendations. Green is a very non-trusting color. So when you wear green, people are not going to be as compliant with your recommendations. When you wear collars and cuffs, people are going to be more compliant with your recommendations versus, you know, a lot of times you see in veterinary practices, veterinarians and healthcare team members are wearing scrubs and it's V-neck short sleeve. Well, if you want to get better compliance with your clients, you should wear a collared shirt or long sleeve cuffed shirts. The shorter your hair is, the smarter people think you are. And so all of this is just, it's very psychological and it's very emotional issue, but research does show that these things are true. And so physical appearance plays a huge part in the communication that happens between individuals. And so at this practice, we want to leverage the healthcare team as much as we possibly can. And so everyone on the team wears this. And it becomes an equal playing field for everyone. There's no visual hierarchy in this practice. So from the client's view, they see everyone wearing this professional uniform. And from a visual point of view, they see everyone has the knowledge. Everyone here can help me and can solve my problems for me. And it creates a consistent image for the client, and there's no visual hierarchy, and so it really empowers the healthcare team because there's no differentiation between doctors and healthcare team members, because we really wanted to focus on getting the doctors out of the center of our practice, and we wanted clients to know, you know what, there are many people here that can help solve your problems other than just veterinarians. Yes, there, I mean, obviously there are certain tasks and things that only veterinarians can do, obviously. But there's many things that other people in our practice can help and solve for our clients. And so from a visual point of view, this uniform does that. Someone, you had a question. The kennel staff does not put this on when they first come in the morning. They change. Mm-hmm.
Now what about your other staff?
But the other staff, they do not change. That's what they wear. They do. They do it. And I think they have extra shirts available so that they can change if they need to, if something like that does take place. But they do change if they need to. Yes.
Do you require
your doctor? Yes, everyone wears it. Are we done, Emily? I knew we were almost out of time. We're going to continue this discussion. Part two is going to be, is it lunch break now? Okay, so we're going to have a lunch break. And then we're going to come back and we're going to finish up the standards of service, communication, and conduct. Thank you so much.